like to read a poem by Angela Herrera called Lucky Streak. Who cast a spell over my world? Who opened the doors, stirred the crowd of possibilities, put gold dust in my dreams, causing my life to turn? O fate, O love, O spirit, O God, is it true that all good things must end? Or have you set me on a path of meaning, not luck, of clarity, not magic? And this grace that brought me to the mountaintop is also a sign to carry me through the dark forests of loss, the ones that await us all, that disturb our peaceful sleep. The same grace that guides the seasons, cracking the ice, pushing up saplings, scattering the earth with their first dramatic leaves. The theme we'll be exploring throughout October is grace. For many Unitarian Universalists, especially those of us who carry heavy religious baggage or spiritual wounds, grace is a hot potato word and concept. Like sin, salvation, redemption, and other theological concepts that we tend to avoid. Despite our discomfort, I think we ought to wrestle with these words and concepts, reclaim them, and cultivate them so we can have renewed tools for building beloved community, for dialoguing with people of other faiths, and for nurturing our individual spiritual journeys. In everyday conversation, we use the word grace liberally to describe aesthetic qualities of physical movement, as in a graceful dancer, and pleasing social and cultural qualities, qualities that suggest poise, confidence, beauty, kindness, caring, and patience. In Christianity, grace describes a doctrine. It is the guarantee that God bestows perfect love to mortals who, by virtue of their flawed, sinful nature, do not deserve a divine favor, act of mercy, or blessing, but may receive these anyway. Grace is like a divine get-out-of-jail-free card. No matter how badly one has behaved, or even if one has intentionally hurt others, God can deliver unmerited favor. So undeserved blessings when we need them most. Have you ever been blessed or gifted unexpectedly when it really mattered so that it made you sit up and take notice? I want to tell you about a gift of grace I received long ago, and I think you'll agree it was undeserved. In the 1970s, I worked as a cook aboard seagoing commercial vessels, and I recall one day in particular during a multi-country trip in South America, which remains particularly vivid in my memory. So it's mid-morning, and my ship has just docked at a little port in Argentina. I'm busy prepping lunch when the chief officer pops into the galley and says, "Hello, cook." He's Norwegian. "Hello, cook. Customs are here. Can we have a look around your cabin?" Well, it's standard practice for customs officers to poke around a ship that has just docked, look at documents, and check some of the crew quarters for contraband. "Sure, go ahead," I say, and keep chopping peppers for my masterpiece pasta sauce. And seconds later, the second cook, Roxanne, is standing next to me, whispering in my ear, "You got rid of that bag of pot, right?" I don't know what she's talking about. Oh, now I do. Roxanne is referring to the recreational marijuana that ended up in my cabin during a recent get-together with some of the younger crew members. My heart is pounding. I am frozen in place. A rapid review of my memories makes evident the grim reality. After the party, I meant to get rid of the weed, but instead absently dropped the little bag into my desk drawer and promptly forgot all about it. So now I imagine the drama that's about to unfold. It's 1978 and I'm in Argentina. I'll surely be arrested, imprisoned, and maybe even disappear like thousands of others in this country who've been taken by the military guerrillas. Worse, my family will be shamed and hurt. My future is over. The chief officer returns to the galley and summons me. I walk a death march to my quarters and see customs man standing by my desk, the drawer open. I'm prepared for handcuffs and arrest. Instead, customs man pulls up a little tin, the one I use for storing odd coins from around the world. He hopes I will let him have a few coins from the Republic of Cape Verde for his collection. So I'm in shock. I move between him and the desk drawer where the bag sits in plain view, but he's so distracted by the coins he doesn't notice. And I stammer, "Yes, of course, take whatever you like," as I gently close the drawer with my backside. Did I deserve that grace? No. I had broken the law and the policies of my company that I was working for, my employer, not to mention having shown disregard for the authority of the company and having been so reckless. I was given a second chance that day, or another chance. Some might call it luck. But given the context, I had been living a pretty shiftless, self-absorbed existence up to that point in my life. And my life would have flamed out had the outcome with the customs man been less lucky. Luck is about random opportunism. Grace has some characteristics of luck, but grace wakes us up, commands that we be receptive, and that we in turn practice gratitude. Grace demands our intentional effort. That day, the universe invited me to reflect, reframe, and restore my life. I call that gift of awakening grace. It could be my blue-collar work ethic or having grown up in a climate of humanist values, but I tend to believe that humans need to make some effort to be deserving of grace, divine or otherwise. Many of us struggle with the notion of a divine dispenser of grace. The universalist in me bristles at the suggestion that a loving God would give grace only to some, or at certain times. The humanist Unitarian in me believes we already have grace, like inherent worth and dignity. It takes effort to find grace, and it takes a community to nurture this gift. One of the reasons I think we all come to be in spiritual fellowship is what German theologian Paul Tillich referred to as the gestalt of grace. The gestalt of grace is the sum of the experience of gathering together in holy community. The practice of being in spiritual community requires our intentional acts of grace. Each of us must find our grace and send the gift of grace into the community. As evolved sentient beings, we possess greater potential together than alone. Each of us is equipped, gifted to add value to life and especially to the lives of others in community and in fellowship. In spiritual community, grace looks like a phone call that says, "Are you feeling any better? We missed you on Sunday." Grace is volunteering to host a parent and taught playgroup. Grace is buying a bubble machine for the church to use at Pride Parade. Unitarian minister John Wolfe said, "We are rewarded not according to what we do or what we don't do or what we deserve or do not deserve in this life, but only according to our capacity to receive what good there is in our existence, It is called grace. Unmerited, amazing grace. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound. John Newton, the 18th century Englishman who wrote the famous hymn, had been a slave trader before he became a prominent abolitionist. He said his change of heart, which turned his life around, was grace's doing. It rescued, or it saved, a wretch like me. Grace can therefore be understood to mean the gift of unexpected rescue. It is the buoy that appears at our side when we're about to drown. But from what hazards do we need rescue? What is wretched about our lives? Physical, emotional suffering, perhaps? Loss of meaning? Existential despair? There are many dangers, toils, and snares on the path of life. And given our ever-present need for rescue, liberal theologian Henry Nelson Wieman, whose theology came to depend very little on God, kept room for grace in his beliefs. Wieman, who became a Unitarian in 1949, wrote about being worried that we humans plunge into despair when we fail to live up to our ideals. And we do invariably fail. According to Wieman, a creative power or process, possibly called God, can transform us into beings capable of doing great good. This process, which he called creative interchange, is at work whenever individuals or institutions communicate in ways that foster new meanings. As we integrate these new meanings, our sense of the world's richness expands, and our sense of community strengthens. That, for women, is grace. A contemporary of women, Jerome Stone, judges the notion of God to be scientifically obsolete. Yet Stone, like women, keeps room for grace. For him, grace is the awe we experience. For example, when we catch sight of whales joyfully breaching the water's surface, or when we hear a perfect symphony of birdsong at our window. These are grace-like moments, but they are nature's gifts, not a deity's. Stone maintains that when life troubles threaten to drown us, glimpses of beauty can keep us afloat. Social ethicist and Unitarian theologian James Luther Adams insisted on the reality of a God beyond the natural order, whose creative power sustains meaning and goodness. For Adams, this creative power finds its richest focus when groups of people work together to serve the divine reality by securing freedom, peace, and social justice. He believed that God commands and transforms us with, quote, a love that cares for the fullest personal good of all. Rescued by God, we must act together to rescue others. Touched by grace, we are to recreate grace. Paul Tillich, who I mentioned earlier, who coined the idea of the term gestalt of grace, he says also about transformative power of grace, he says this, grace strikes us when we are in great pain and restlessness. It strikes us when we walk through the dark valley of meaninglessness and empty life. It strikes us when we feel that our separation is deeper than usual because we have violated another life, a life which we have loved or from which we are estranged. It strikes us when our disgust for our own being, our indifference, our weakness, our hostility, and our lack of direction and composure have become intolerable to us. It strikes us when year after year the longed-for perfection of life does not appear, when old compulsions reign within us as they have for decades, when despair destroys joy and courage. until it continues. He says, sometimes at that moment, a wave of light breaks into our darkness, and if that happens to us, we experience grace. After such an experience, we may not be better than before, and we may not believe more than before, but everything is transformed. If in Christianity, grace is about not deserving, then the opposite of grace must be what Buddhists call karma, because karma is all about getting exactly what we deserve. One does not have to be a Buddhist to appreciate the concept of karma and how it can help us to keep our lives on track. Karma relates to fate and action. Simply described, karma is the sum of a person's actions in this life and previous states of existence, all of which decides their fate in future existences. Cause and effect, an immutable law of the cosmos. For every action, there will always be a reaction. Whatever we do will always come back to us. So while each of us travels a unique, singular life path, we are all linked. And whether we are aware of it or not, our thoughts and feelings and words and actions continually change and shape the world around us. Buddhists hold that as evolved beings, we are responsible for our actions. Thus, we are continually creating both our happiness and our misery. We create our future. In learning from our past, every feeling, every thought prepares us for our future. The reason our fate is never truly set is because we have free will. Life gives us chances. We can't escape our past, but learning from it will change our future. It's intention that really creates karma. If we deliberately harm someone, our intentions were bad, and that creates bad karma. Good intentions will always create good karma. But can we change our karma? I believe so. We can at least change the direction of our karma. Anything we did in our past can be undone or mitigated by doing good now. We reap what we sow. Thus, our destiny is also an emergent process. We live in a state of continual recreation. We can undo whatever we've done to others with bad intent through living compassionately, by asking forgiveness of those we have harmed, by letting go of our regrets, by resisting the urge to take revenge on those who harm us, and responding to them instead with love. The purpose of karma is to help us become better people. Anybody ever seen a chameleon? Well, a chameleon is a small lizard creature whose transformative powers allow it to change its colors so it can blend with any background. Brown against the earth, green next to the leaves, red and orange amidst flowers. Wow. Same creature, different look in different contexts. Now imagine, if you will, a karma chameleon. A being whose intentional, mindful, grace-seeking, grace-bestowing, radical, resilient powers can help transform undeserving beings into deserving beings. For the karma chameleon, grace takes many shapes and appears out of nowhere when it is least expected, like a Unitarian Universalist superhero. And we can all become karma chameleons, intentionally performing unassuming acts of grace that do not seek the return of our favor. Through the practice of grace, we are the blessing. We are the blessed. In closing, I hope you can better appreciate that grace is not so much a theological hot potato to be avoided, but rather a rich, multi-layered concept which holds a variety of templates for living a good life. So perhaps you understand grace to be serendipity, or you see it as a form of creative interchange, or as the capacity to receive what good there is in your life, or the unexpected glimpses of beauty that rescue you, or God's creative power expressed when you work in groups for freedom, peace, and justice in the world, or that wave of light that breaks through your times of dark despair. However you perceive moments of grace in your life, I encourage you to please be sure to keep scanning your horizon for incoming grace. Practice gratitude. Be the unexpected blessing in someone's life. Be a guerrilla gardener of grace. Be a karma chameleon. For grace will lead you home. May it be so. Amen.